And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. We're just speaking with Agnesho Banjari and David Darling, who have written Weird Math, a teenage genius and his teacher reveal the strange connections between math and everyday life. Joining us now, Roger Burrows in the studio. He's a local resident and writer, mathematician, and inventor who works in the fields of geometry, design, architectural form, and interactive learning. He established the software and technology department of PC Caps at Park City High School. He joins us now to talk about his two new books titled 3D Thinking and Mind Doodles. These books will help you at least with an introductory knowledge of the logic. For an example, if you happen to visit the pyramids or the Mayans or walk the labyrinths of the medieval cathedrals of France, Roger Burrows, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. The book is beautifully illustrated. And even if you don't read it, and I read as much as I could, but even if you don't, just going through the pictures, it will bring up many questions about associations and about how things were influenced back in those days. Tell us why you wrote this book.
Well, I've always been inquisitive, and I am an inventor, if you like. So I'm always processing things. And, you know, for inspiration in my business, which is now gone, but I would walk around a hardware store, I'd look in a toy store, I'd wonder how things worked. And in my youth, I'd do things like hitchhiking down to Morocco and spending time. And again, I'd look at things and wonder why they were there, how they worked, you know, what the logic of them was. And it sort of all spins out of that. Traveling, looking, thinking, and getting quite enthused and coming up with new ideas. I find inspiration in the past. I find it really exciting. You know, people invented stuff all the way through time. It's just, when we look at it, they just look old and antique, but that's because of the time. You know, they had a limited knowledge, limited materials, and they took their ideas as far as they could, but they were still truly inspirational. I mean, they really were. It's quite exciting. I mean, we're kind of living in a gigantic toy store in a way. All these ideas, and many just never taken further because of the limits of their time.
Some of us can appreciate it, some of us can't. Can you describe the difference between a person that would have a two-dimensional mindset and a person that would have a three-dimensional mindset?
Well, that's a big story behind that one. keep it simple. A lot comes down, funnily, to taxation.
Taxation.
It comes down to tax. In the Indus Valley civilization, 4,000 years ago. Settled civilization. The culture needed money, you know, build roads, which they had, sewerage, which they had 4,000 years ago. So you have to raise money. So they even went to the point of brick sizes. Clay brick sizes were standardized because this brick created that amount of tax, this one, that amount of tax. How many bricks did you use? Well, you have to pay this much tax. And then if you go forward in time, well, not really, maybe backwards in time to the Nile, the Egyptians, they had floods. So if you were a peasant, probably was, your field on the Nile banks would be flooded. But again, my field size, say, as a peasant, would be taxed. So after the flood, my field boundaries have gone. Reinstate the field boundaries, use a square grid. That's what they did. So they started thinking in squares. Squares became their proportional system. Pyramids, whole numbers. That sort of flattened off perspective. The way you thought of space became square grids. If you go into a Neolithic cave and you look at the wall paintings on Neolithic cave, you'll notice the paintings are not in squares or rectangles, not like the pictures on your wall. So squares then became imposed. And I think everyone listening to this, if you look around your environment, you're going to see rectangles and squares.
Mm-hmm.
People think that way. Yeah, we gravitate towards cubes, but big deal. You know, cubes really a limited spatial environment.
Okay, so let's leave squares and rectangles for a moment, because something you said a moment ago about hitchhiking from England down to Morocco. Now, I haven't been to Morocco, but it made me immediately think of the Alhambra in Granada, Spain. Mm-hmm. So the Moors who made these elaborate, beautiful castles, and they were less about squares and rectangles and more about circles and concentric circles, it seems. And I know this is an area of study that's interesting to you. Mm. Why do they view, did taxation have something to do with why they viewed things as circles? I doubt it.
It's a whole different path. Alhambra was a palace of pleasure. It's highly decadent in Islamic culture, but the roots of it go back to the Abbasids. They were, if anyone's heard of 1001 Nights and Harun al-Rashid, he was an Abbasid. That era of early Islam. But put aside Islam, think of the time, 700 AD and on to 1100. It was a time of renaissance, of ideas. In that time, the Arabs, if you like, were rediscovering the works of ancient Greece. They got so excited, and they came up with so many new concepts of mathematics, applied mathematics. So how do you construct a dome? How do you create a pattern on a wall? What are you trying to communicate? I mean, they were very full of that. In Islam, there was a restriction on idolatry. So it became more geometric, because you couldn't create a physical image because it would be considered idolatrous. Mm. So they invented lots of different methods for dividing space, two-dimensional and three-dimensional. And when you look at the Alhambra, which is built much later than, well, the tail end of the Abbasid, it's really utilizing some of them that applied mathematics, but in a decadent way. It's almost like Gothic cathedrals, if you like. If you look at Stonehenge and you look at Chartres Cathedral in France, well, you know, you've got simplicity, Stonehenge, and amazing complication, which you could describe as decadence. You know, Gothic means sort of ugly, over the top. I mean, and they were over the top, but beautiful, but over the top.
Well, we rely on people like you and our previous guests, David Darling and Agnieszko Banerjee, to inspire us towards this type of thinking and this type of, well, being inquisitive, as you are. And I have to admit, until today, the only time I have really been curious about form and the mathematical equation was when I was in Machu Picchu in Peru and looking at the impossible task of fitting those huge rocks together. But I would imagine someone like you goes through life, you can look across Sweet Alley here and look at the forms across the street and the historic buildings, and you think of it in a different way. Describe that to help me and to help John with our inquisitiveness.
That's an interesting question. The more you think about this stuff, you don't think in terms of the immediate time. You start to think of a almost time travel. It's a strange thing. It's difficult to describe. But when I look at the buildings in Park City, I can kind of feel and think of their lineage. Why are they rectangles? What are the rectangles? What are the bricks? What are the brick sizes? You know, what were the materials that were available here? What was here before? How did it look? You know, all those thoughts, truly. I mean, I don't think you'd want to inhabit my brain. It's kind of too busy.
For a day, maybe.
No, I don't think so. But that's the sort of thing. It's like a sort of time travel of the mind. You just don't go into, like, if when I'm at Stonehenge or at Chartres Cathedral or wherever it is, I'm not just there of that moment. I'm really thinking back. You know, why did the monks use and build the labyrinth in Chartres Cathedral? Why? what was the mathematics, what was the reasoning, what was the symbolism, you know, blah, 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 blah.
So, wow.
I agree with you. I just got back from a big trip to Europe and, you know, I found myself doing the same thing. You know, where did this come from? But if you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Roger Burroughs. He has written 3D Thinking and Design and Architecture from Antiquity to the Future. We are here in the studios at KPCW in Park City. That is all rectangles and squares, isn't it, Lynn? You know, now that Roger brings it up, that's certainly it. I wanted to ask you a question about how cultures influence math. On page 173, you talk about Islamic geometry. Now, they had studied Greek and Roman geometries, and then they modified it to reflect their own cultural influences. What role does culture have in mathematics?
Well, you know, I heard a little bit of your previous interview, and if you want to generalize as sort of pure mathematics, which is really that whole Fermat theorem.
Yes.
That's pure. It's abstract. It's like an abstract logical game for people. But there's applied mathematics, which is you have a situation, a cultural situation, and a really good one is if you imagine being on this planet 10,000 years ago and you don't have conventions of north, south, east, west, you don't. But you know to survive, you have to know when the caribou are coming down. You have to know when to plant. So, and then some bright spark notices the shortest shadow of every day is north, points north. And you end up with a sort of north, south, east, west. And then some other bright spark looks at the stars and see how they rotate. And they also correspond with cycles, solar cycles, and time. So, but during those time, during that evolution of concept, key concepts, navigation, measurement, you have this sort of wonder of what everyone's seeing. You're looking at the stars, but you don't know what they are. I mean, not then. Now, okay, we have all these concepts of stars and galaxies, but they didn't then. They were just these lights that moved in the night sky, and then there's these little dots that moved irregularly in the night sky. We know those are planets. They didn't. So you have this sort of cultural phenomena, which is the belief of what you see. You know, you start to equate it with spirits, with belief and tradition. And you get prejudice of too, you know, that you get a sort of dawning of geometry, which can be prejudicial in the sense that the people eventually thought the Earth was a sphere. Well, it's not a perfect sphere. In fact, there probably isn't a perfect sphere anywhere. It's an abstract hypothesis. But culture tends to sort of seize on a concept and often freezes it so that people can't think outside of the box. So culture is very dominant. Belief, spiritual belief, preconception, all of these things. So I say in the book that math, geometry, from an applied point of view, is cultural. You know, it's all to do with standardized practices. A triangle, a square. These are abstract concepts. We use them very effectively, but they're still abstract.
That's fascinating. And this melting pot of interpretations of geometry as different cultures add value to geometry, they've all built on each other. And Lynn and I have tackled math several times in this program, and it's tough for us. We're not really good with math, but we love to talk about it, and we would love to be able to learn more. And I think over time we are a little bit. But the thing that fascinates me, because I think about this from time to time, is that, you know, we try to observe and describe our world around us. That's what science is. And one of the ways to do that is to go out and explore. And we've done that in a number of ways outside of Earth. For an example, recently, and Lynn and I had a show on New Horizons, which was a spacecraft that flew billions of miles to get to Pluto. Now it's heading towards an asteroid. We're going to hear about the first of the year. We're looking forward to that. And then also landing a SUV-sized rover on the surface of Mars, a soft landing. All of these things that we've done outside Earth with simple Newtonian equations with some modification. But Newton came up with these equations on how we can deal with gravity. And that's taken us through our solar system and now beyond. It's amazing.
It's very interesting. For some people, mathematics equations, they're sort of double Dutch. It's like shorthand, you know. It's lots of squiggles and dots and shapes. But for me, mathematics, it's idea. It's an idea-based logic. I mean, it's usually linked to need, human needs and solutions. So you take Newton wondering, you know, why, you know, the classic is the apple falling from the tree, but if you threw an apple hard enough, there's a point where it won't come back down. So he became fascinated in these events that he was observing, and his shorthand for expressing those events was a mathematical expression. But before the math and the squiggles and the calculus, if you like, before that was his concept. And without his concept, there would not be the math. The math is just a simple means of expressing the logic. That's all math is. So everyone gets confused by the language of math, and they should, because no one actually talks about the actual language of math. They'll throw an equation at you, and you're supposed to know what it means. But most people don't, because they're not explaining what it means. It's like I suddenly start speaking to you in French and you don't have a French dictionary and I expect you to understand it. I mean, it's really, in my mind, silly. Anyway.
We're speaking with Roger Burrows. I'm holding another book of yours called Mind Doodles, Designed to Color Ancient Ideas to Explore and Puzzles to Solve. You're ahead of your time, because now, you know, these coloring books are ubiquitous with patterns and designs that you just hover over with your colored pencils and draw them. But very interesting, because you also go into, you know, you've got a design here, for example, that mimics some of the design you would see in pyramids, say in the Yucatan Peninsula or in, you know, Belize or Guatemala. And you explain sort of why there was the use of these step lines instead of circles. Very interesting. And, you know, we just have a few minutes left, and I have to just completely go off and ask you something totally different. What do you make of crop circles?
Well, you know, if I ever met an alien, I would believe in aliens. But right now, I have no evidence to think aliens are creating them. Circular, it's very easy. I know, I was raised in the country. It's very easy to flatten a corn crop. And so if circles, I mean, if you're starting, you could do it so many different ways. You can just stick a pole in the ground, a rope, and just walk around spreading out that circle. I mean, you can flatten a crop, and then you'll, I mean, I don't want to, and I highly don't recommend it. We need these crops.
Right.
But
the
yeah.
designs are fascinating yeah. when you see them from an aerial view.
Artistically, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Circular. Mostly circular.
Okay, because you can put the pole
probably
in.
Probably because of yeah. that. And you're just pivoting around a central point. But you're right. But I'll tell you one thing. You know, the new ground-penetrating radar and they're using in South America is revealing all these sort of geometric shapes in the jungle. Have you come across that
Mm-mm,
yet?
No.
It's amazing. I mean, we knew about, you know, the Aztecs, the Incas, and all that stuff. But now they're finding hundreds, if not thousands, of the remains of architectural form in geometrical. They love squares and circles.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you another question about the big book. On page 84, you show these 12 beautiful Egyptian decorative patterns, and I'm surprised to learn that they were created without numeric values assigned to these hieroglyphic, or I'm not sure if I have that word right, consonants. But they had a very sophisticated numbering system. Why didn't they use that to create these sophisticated patterns?
Gosh, hang on. I'm going to have to think about that a second. There is a tradition, and not everyone accepts it, but hieroglyphs did have a numeric value, and that led to the Semitic scripts like Hebrew and Arabic that had numeric value. So there was a numeric value to their mathematics and their language. The patterns that the Egyptian used are really traditional, and a lot of coming out of Ethiopia, Mesopotamia in the Indus Valley. So cut that one short a bit, but
yeah,
it's...
Roger Burrows, he's written 3D Thinking and Design and Architecture from Antiquity to the Future. Thanks so much for joining us.
Can I quickly say, June 3rd, Silly Market, I'll be there at the Park City Publishing booth. Dollies carry these books, 3D Thinking and Mind Doodles. Get them on Amazon. And the library's planning an event in July.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us, Roger. Very
Thanks,
interesting.
Roger.
Let's thank our underwriters, San Francisco Design, Berkshire Hathaway, Home Services, Utah Properties, Habitat for Humanity Restore, Natural History Museum of